And welcome to the Unclenched Podcast here at KSCO.com. I am your host, the Notorious BLT. These are the stories we talk about that are too cochino to make it onto the radio at Flight 1080, on which I am on every Tuesday from 4 to 6 p.m. Of course, there are other people who are possibly part of other hosts. So please feel free to listen to them. And let's see here. So yeah, okay. Let's see. Oh my gosh, it's one of those things where my first article was preempted, but I think it's worth talking about. This is from Wired Magazine, and they just finally put me behind a paywall, dang it, while I finally pulled up the story. So the title of the story is "She's Never Gonna Age, Porn Stars Are Embracing AI Clones to Stay Forever Young," by Jason Parham, March 26th. So let's see if I can find the story. Let me just give you a little pause before I resume here. Okay, we're back. I managed to find an archive version of this article. So let's see here. Let's start reading here. All right. Lisa Ann technically quit the porn business in 2019, but for $30 a month, you can dream up any X-rated scenario of her on your computer. Ann, 53, was an adult performer for three decades, starting in the mid-1990s and retired because she had reached her savings goal. Good for her. But last year, she had a change of heart. Anne, who considers herself an AI fanatic, signed a contract with OChat, O-H-C-H-A-T, a London-based AI companion company, to license her likeness on its platform, essentially creating an AI version of her in every way that can be used to make sex scenes for paying customers. Same voice, same physique, same pillowy brown hair. At issue around deepfakes intensify and questions about the future of the adult industry become more dire with the passing of age verification laws, several AI companion platforms want to create a new standard for consent-driven AI porn. More than sexting a faceless chatbot, digital twins, also called duplicates, doubles, clones, or replicas, draw on the exact likeness, including speech and mannerisms, of your favorite performers and creators. And now a self-help author and sports radio host, represents a growing fraction of adult entertainment who does not only believe AI is going to reshape the sex industry, but who want a say in how the change materializes. She sees the decision to partner with OChat as a way to tap the fountain of youth and stay at her peak forever. Quote, "This keeps my name alive," she says of her digital twin. Quote, "She's never going to age." Cherie DeVille, 47, a 47-year-old performer known for shooting MILF content, digital twins are just a smart business strategy to earn passive income while the opportunity is hot. Quote, "We can either let the makers of AI take the lion's share of the money in the sex workspace, or creators and businesses can get on board and start creating their own revenue sources through AI," unquote. OChat creators who submit 30 images and undergo voice training with a bot sign an agreement stating the level of sexual content allowed for their digital twin, and is considered level 4, the highest on the platform, which means paying members can create scenarios and chats of her that include full nudity and sex. Per the company's guidelines, clones can be deleted at any time. Quote, "For guys that like to say good morning or good night, they now have that access. The fact that I'm not shooting scenes anymore also allows new scenes to be created," Ann says. Now, this is an interesting concept, I guess. Right? And it might have some unforeseen consequences, or just consequences in the porn space might actually reach out beyond the porn space, like a lot of technology, say the internet or whatever, right? A lot of actors can also probably license their image and likeness to other digital creators to make content using their image and likeness and voice or whatever. And they don't necessarily have to hire the actors. Heck, right? I mean, like Lisa Ann or whatever, they don't even have to keep in shape, right? You can get your body in peak physical shape, then have your body scanned by the AI, by the computer, digital creator, maker, or whatever. And then you can just go on and get fat and old and, you know, still keep cashing in those checks of people who want to, you know, make content of you doing all sorts of cool stuff or whatever. And same for actors who aren't doing porn, right? The mainstream TV and movies, right? Right. You could be, you know, Sylvester Stallone can be forever in his 20s or 30s when he did Rocky and Rambo First Blood, as opposed to, well, you know, being in his early, late 60s or early 70s or something, and, you know, being kind of broken up or something. But so, yeah, I mean, you know, that will be interesting. And of course, you know, if you are a, you know, let's say you're a pretty girl, right? Pretty woman, young woman, so to speak. You don't necessarily want to do porn in the sense that, well, you might get some sort of social disease or whatever. You might hurt yourself or whatever. It's a lot of work. It's physically exhausting, whatever the case may be. Just sell your image and voice and likeness to some AI company and they can just scan your image and scan your voice and just, they can make their own porn using your, using a, you know, digital image or digital replica of yourself and, you know, collect the checks. I don't know if that, I don't know what the implications of that are, but I do know, or at least I do get the impression that those implications would be kind of, well, will be big in that sense. And, you know, but I don't know if people will, if consumers of porn are going to change their consumption habits, if they will embrace this artificial intelligence porn, or whether or not they'll want the real thing, or heck, even if they can tell, because I don't know if you, I don't know about you, but a lot of this AI generated video content that portrays real people is getting pretty good. You can still tell, I think, right now, if you're paying attention to certain things, like the way the lips move or whatever, the ways the eyes move, the complexion of the face and skin, you can, you, if you look hard enough, you can still tell if it's artificial intelligence or not. But, you know, technology, as technology progresses, maybe at some point you won't be able to. And I think that might have some unforeseen implications. But anyways, yeah. For now, just enjoy Lisa Ann, AI clone, doing all sorts of stuff that she probably wouldn't be able to do or probably wouldn't want to do in real life, or, you know, for a live shoot, as the case may be. Let's see. Also, I guess we have some more. We have a science update. So I guess I should start. I should play my science update music song. Let's see here. Do I even have a science update music song? Let's see here. Yeah, I do have, actually. Oh, let's see. Let's see if I can play this and make this work. Yes, she did. Or at least, well, hopefully, well, Lisa Ann more blinded me with technology. But anyways, this is from VT.com. Science just found a new side effect of regular masturbation. It's left people godsmacked. This is by Patrick H. I don't know if this is one of those articles that's so, you know, so gross and creepy that you can't give your full name, but who knows? Let's see here. Is there a date on this thing? Oh, yeah, published March 26th. Oh, there you go. Researchers at the University of Oxford believe they have found a secret to maximizing sperm health, and it goes against popular belief. Eating copious amounts of pineapple to add to the flavor profile of the male reproductive product, cutting out Dr. Pepper, and even regulating temperatures of testicles by keeping them in a more chilled environment, like some kind of perishable food item. There are many tales surrounding sperm, but this one comes from respected science. You know, yeah, I'm going to put the respected science in quotation marks, but, you know, Oxford, right? When it comes to fertility, women are often described as having a biological ticking clock because they are born with a finite number of eggs. As they age, so do their eggs. Men, however, produce sperm continuously from puberty, and those sperm can be stored in the body before ejaculation. This means sperm can effectively age independently of the man. Men trying to conceive are often told to abstain from sex for several days to increase the sperm count. While this does raise the number of sperm, new research suggests there's a downside. Sperm stored for longer periods begin to deteriorate. In fact, the study found that sperm kept during the abstinence ages and declines in quality. Researchers analyzed data from 115 studies involving 55,000 men and discovered that longer gaps between ejaculations were linked to poor sperm health. Motility, how well sperm swim, and viability both dropped, while DNA damage increased. Scientists believe this happens for two reasons. One is the oxidative stress, essentially the kind of biological rust that builds up and damages sperm. The other is energy depletion, as sperm are highly active cells that eventually run out of fuel if stored too long. Current guidelines recommend abstaining for 2 to 7 days before sperm sample for testing or IVF. However, the findings suggest shorter abstinence periods could actually improve sperm quality. Other research supports this, showing better IVF outcomes when ejaculation occurs within 48 hours of providing a sample. So, keep on, I guess. Just like the women's eggs, the guy's sperm has an expiration date. I guess 48 hours. For some guys, that's not going to be a problem, even if they don't have a sexual partner. I guess, you know, and the Lisa Ann clone from AI might help you on that. But speaking of, well, since we're in the groinal neighborhood of science, let's see, this is from the New York or California Post, depending on where you are. Title of the article, "Well, Hot Dog, U.S. States with the Longest Penises Revealed. See How New York Measures Up." This is by Asia Grace, published on March 12. New York men have a reason to squawk like a cock of the walk. The Big Apple is apparently no misnomer, as its home has been crowned as one of the top five states with the longest penises, according to a new report. And there are hard facts to substantiate the claim. Quote, "Penis size is often treated as a cultural fixation, but is rarely discussed with real numbers attached," wrote a study authors of Bespoke Surgical, a sex health clinic in Manhattan. I sense a little bit of home court bias here, but researchers surveyed over 3,000 adults and asked participants with penises to self-report their flaccid and erect lengths in order to find the median size of members in each state. Self-report. And surprisingly, Iowa took the number one spot for boasting the biggest corns on the cob. Men of the Midwestern lands measured an impressive 7.31 inches on average at full erection per the risque ranking. Perky penises in South Carolina and Arizona secured second and third place positions on the podium, extending out to 7.04 and 7.01 inches, respectively. For my European friends, I don't know what the centimeter conversion is, but yeah, you can look it up on the internet. And although fellows of the Empire State didn't take the gold, silver, or bronze medals in the unofficial pickle length games, New Yorkers are still coming up roses with an average span of 6.72 inches, earning the number four spot on the list. Okay, let's see here. Chaps on the opposite coast have a reason to gloat too. Californians stand proud at 6.15 inches, but sadly, the decent standing was not enough to earn the state top five status. Well, endowed dudes in Indiana rounded out the foremost roundup with a solid 6.68 inch showing. Oh, well, so there you go. We don't have anything to be ashamed about, but yeah, who knows? Now, this is, again, since we're in the neighborhood of the crotch, so to speak, there might be a theme to this podcast, but anyways, this is from notthebee.com. Op-ed, this professor's comment about girlfriends with penises show how colleges desperately need a reality check, by Peter Heck, published March 23rd. At a recent California State University Board of Trustees meeting, the debate over transgender athletes in women's sports didn't just get heated. It exposed something deeper, not just disagreement, confusion. The clip below puts the confusion on full display. A college professor offers an explanation you have to hear to believe. And I think, let me see if I could find that clip here. I think I found this here. Hang on a moment here. Here it is. Let's see if I get this to play correctly.
And the idea that I have to get up here and say that trans women are women and that's what I have to use my time to do is absurd. Shame on you. Shame on all of you. And shame on you for using lesbian politics as a front for your transphobia, because this lesbian has had plenty of girlfriends with penises.
This the lesbian with girlfriends with penises. I don't know if she... I hope she's not a biology professor. Let's just say that. Because she is a biology professor. Oh boy, are our kids in trouble. Anyways, let's see. Back to the Not the Bee article. The sentence should have been unintelligible just a few years ago. Well, 10 years ago. Not controversial. Incomprehensible. It collapses categories that until very recently were universally understood. And yet here it is. Spoken not by a confused teenager on social media, but a professor at a major university. I wonder which Cal State she goes to, just for curiosity. This result is a symptom of thought that has trained people to speak fluently in reality that does not actually exist. We have built a framework that detaches words from meaning, identity from body, and truth from anything fixed or knowable. Then we're taught the framework in classrooms, reinforced in institutions, and amplified through the media, and rewarded people with degrees for mastering its language. Yeah, that sounds about right. But I hope it wouldn't trigger this professor if someone told her that if she's a lesbian that has girlfriends with penises, that she's probably not a lesbian. honey, you straight. You totally straight. But anyways, let's see here. On to the Stack O stuff. This is from, I think, the also from the New York Post, February 12th. The rise of masculine contouring. Well, when meet the men optimizing their bodies with liposuction. Rose Catanzarite was a scrawny kid with a big appetite. Ross Catanzarite. Sorry about that, Ross. Was a scrawny kid with a big appetite, one that caught up with him after high school. Suddenly, in his early 20s, weight clung to his 5'8" frame. He tried everything from calorie counting to no carb eating plans to intermittent fasting. Nothing was sustainable. He would lose 40 to 50 pounds only to regain it. This happened four times before he made a life-altering decision in 2019. He and Dr. Anthony Berlay performed liposuction on his torso, namely his chest, abdomen, flanks, love handles, to the tune of a $15,000. He balanced everything out. Catanzarite, 53, of North Caldwell, New Jersey, told the Post, "I was happy with the results." He's not alone. Liposuction was the top plastic surgery procedure in 2024, especially among men, with over 21,000 performed in the United States. That figure represents a slight bump from 2023. Gone is the notion that cosmetic procedures are exclusively for women, as men increasingly shell out $3,500 to $10,000 per problem area for liposuction that addresses their stubborn fat and boosts their self-confidence. I wonder if he has any of the excess fat, you know, transferred to his butt. But anyways, quote, "Men are no longer view aesthetic treatments as vanity, but as optimization, similar to fitness, grooming, or skincare," Berlay, who has offices in New York, Manhattan, and Cedar Grove, New Jersey, told the Post. "Social media, high-definition video, and constant on-camera exposure have raised awareness of facial structure and aging in men," he added. "At the same time, today's techniques are more subtle and tailored to male anatomy, which has reduced concerns about looking unnatural or feminized." Well, I'm glad someone has a lot of spare income on their hands to make themselves look pretty. But as the case may be, so to each his own. And, you know, and good on that plastic surgeon or whoever that doctor is for probably making a killing. I bet he has fat paychecks. Yeah, who knows? Let's see. This is one of those things where you have to look, you have to wonder how it's done. This is one of those weird crime things. Quadruple amputee professional cornhole player faces murder challenges. This is from KTVU.com, which is the Fox affiliate in the San Francisco Bay Area. Or maybe it's the San Jose Bay Area. Who knows? But this is by Alyssa Salami and Isabel Soyson. I hope I pronounced their name right. So if not, I apologize. Dated March 23rd. Oh, and I guess this is forwarding a story from Fox 5 in D.C. Let's see here. La Plata, Maryland. Oh, a professional cornhole player and quadruple amputee has been formally charged with murder and multiple related offenses in connection with the deadly shooting that occurred in Charles County on March 22, 2026. What we know, Dayton James Weber, 27, of La Plata, Maryland, was arraigned in the District Court of Maryland for Charles County after being located in Charlottesville, Virginia, arrested following the fatal shooting of 27-year-old Bradrick Michael Wells, according to court documents. According to charging documents signed by a detective from Charles County Sheriff's Office, Weber is formally charged with first-degree murder, accused of intentionally with premeditated malice killing Bradrick Wells on or about March 22nd at 1015 Newport Church Road in Charlotte Hall, Charles County, second-degree murder, assault with first-degree 2 counts, use of a firearm in conviction of a felony, alleged firearm use during the offense. According to the statement of charges filed by Detective M. Bigelow of the Charles County Sheriff's Department, Dayton Weber picked up 2 witnesses from a work vehicle with Bradrick Wells already in the front passenger seat. Documents state that while driving, an argument broke out between Weber and Wells. Okay. The witnesses identified the charging documents as Witness 1 and Witness 2 told police that Weber pulled out a firearm and shot Wells twice in the head during the argument. The statement of charges says Weber then pulled the vehicle over and asked the passengers to remove Wells from the car, which they refused. The 2 witnesses exited the vehicle and flagged down a police officer. Documents state while Weber drove off with Wells, is still inside the car. According to the filing, around 12:41 a.m., the March 23rd, a resident at 10115 Newport Church Road in Charlotte Hall discovered Wells' body on the side of the road. Now, he's a quadruple amputee, which means he has no arms or legs. How was he able to shoot somebody with a gun? Now, I understand you could have prosthetics, you know, prosthetic arms and legs. How was he able to drive? But, you know, it's like, you know, with prosthetic arms, prosthetic legs, you can have some level of mobility. But how did he, but usually prosthetic arms don't have hands with articulated fingers, unless, of course, the field of robotics has gotten really advanced. And, you know, I don't know. So that's one of those things that has me. I'm kind of curious to see how a quadruple amp guy with no arms and no legs was able to drive a car, pull out a gun, and shoot somebody. I'm sure, you know, the victim was probably wondering the same thing too. It's like, wow, how'd you get the fig? You have a finger on your prosthetic. You have a prosthetic hand with fingers that can wrap around a trigger. Go figure. But anyways, so that's one of those things that makes me kind of wonder. Oh, let's see here. Also on the stack of stuff here. Does the pretty privileged work at Home Depot customer tests how store workers respond to hot versus not with surprising results? This is by Asia Grace, March 12, from the New York Post. They say home is where the hot is, but even in her hottest fit, a single bombshell struggled to garner attention and affection of folks at Home Depot. Caroline Ricky, a lifestyle content creator, yeah, right, slipped into her sexiest little black dress and sauciest sandals and headed straight for the hardware hub to address the power of pretty privilege in an everyday, mostly male-dominated environment. And the outcomes weren't pretty. Quote, my slutty outfit was met with more apprehension than flirtation. Ricky groaned over 3.2 million social media fans in a viral video. Quote, no one was helping me. I've been sitting here like for 10 minutes and I put on the whole outfit and no one's offering me any help. Rather than being adored, the pinup was ignored by men she expected to sweep her off her feet. But pretty privilege or social benefits exclusively afforded to the gorgeous can be a tricky trait to gauge, even in a hotspot like Home Depot, where single women have flocked in hopes of scoring a husband. Really? All right. While some hotties hail the fetching factor for granting them otherwise unmerited access to free treats and high salaries, others argue that it's a blessing of beauty is actually a curse that bars them from maintaining solid relationships and landing dream jobs. Okay. To truly test the theory, Ricky returned to Home Depot in a sweatshirt and baseball shorts, dumping her look-at-me mini dress for a much more homely look. To the brunette's surprise, the dowdy duds caught eyes. And compliments, too. She was fawned over by an unidentified female staffer who called her pretty, beautiful, and gorgeous during her 2 brief run-ins. Ricky, still in her unfussy wear, later received a high-value store coupon from a male Home Depot worker and randomly found $60 on the ground. Quote, this is like very literally my lucky day, raved the undercover beauty who powdered after failing to curry any favor in her foxy attire. I think they're treating me better because they're not intimidated by me, she concluded of the social experiment, which amassed virtual praise. Quote, you're more approachable that way, a commenter said, referring to Ricky's casual clothes. Quote, you're already beautiful, so dressing down isn't going to change that. Your booty just shines more because your face and confidence carries in a dressy outfit. People are just intimidated, unquote. Now, allow me to present a different take on this, right? When she dressed up really hot, you don't normally go to Home Depot dressed to pick up dudes or whatever, dressed in a cocktail dress and whatever, right? Or slutty, as her own description would say, right? So immediately, people are going to be looking at you like, what's going on? And plus, if she's a content creator and she's dressed like a content creator, maybe people just figuring out, yeah, she's just there to, you know, show off, make a video or whatever. And she's really not there to, you know, get help to buy home improvement products to, you know, do a, you know, household repair or maintenance or whatever, right? But when she dressed, you know, she just looked too, you know, conspicuous. Like, she didn't look like she was there to do the normal things you do at a Home Depot, right? She was there to make a scene. And so people probably ignore her because, you know, subconsciously they realize that, yeah, she wasn't there to just be doing what everyone else is doing. And when she undressed down and just showed up like any normal person would, that, you know, she's still inherently pretty. And therefore she got the attention because, okay, this is someone who is here. She's not trying to pick up anybody. She looks like she might be just someone in genuine need of help. But so I don't know if that necessarily disproves the pretty privilege or not, but, you know, but I guess, who knows? Speaking of which, more for the ladies here, I guess maybe ladies who might wonder if they have a pretty privilege or whatever. This is also from the New York Post, March 20th by Marissa Matozzo. The sinister dating trend where women say men abandon them in the wilderness. Quote, he left me alone to test me. On a grueling 220-mile hike through the California Sierra Nevada, Lori Singer faced a terrifying ordeal. She was abandoned, miles from help, with no one to rely on but herself. In 2016, the avid hiker and adrenaline junkie set out to tackle the John Muir Trail, one of America's most famous backpacking routes, with her close friend and longtime training partner, John, with whom she had the utmost trust. But what was supposed to be an empowering, life-changing experience for friends turned into something straight out of the episode of Dateline. Okay, I haven't seen Dateline in a while, so I have no idea what that means, but I'm assuming it's scary. Quote, he was experienced with the John Muir Trail, having hiked it multiple times, where I was a novice in backpacking and little altitude training, Singer, 66, told the Post. Good on her for being hiking the John Muir Trail at 66. You know, I'm like 10 years younger than her, and I probably couldn't even make, you know, I probably couldn't even hike a flat sea level altitude trail, but good on her. Anyways, as a result, the duo planned to hike roughly 20 miles per day across the famously punishing trail, since the hike of this scale typically takes 2 or 3 weeks to complete. Things quickly took a turn just days into the hike. Singer began feeling ill, though she didn't yet realize it was altitude sickness, which didn't stop John from charging ahead, quote, leaving me struggling behind. John's a keeper there, Laurie. Quote, one day the sun set and darkness fell. I found myself alone and unsure if I was still on the trail. Not having experience, yet having to rely on John, left me in tears. I was scared and angry at him for leaving me behind, she recalled to the Post. When the California native eventually caught up to her so-called friend, quote, he had set up camp and explained that he left me alone to test me. Unquote. John told her bluntly she wasn't keeping up and suggested she quit the hike. Singer refused. Quote, not because I wanted to be with him, but because I needed to get closer to our endpoint before considering getting off the trail. Oh, God. This John sounds like an ass. But hey, I'm only hearing her side of the story, so maybe if I hear his side, I'll get an explanation. Like, maybe she said, I prefer you to a bear. I don't know. Who knows? Nightmare scenario. Singer experiences a viral phenomenon known as alpine divorce. Really? Okay. Which is when a male friend, family member, or romantic partner abandons a female in an outdoor setting, sometimes as a supposed test like John did, or sometimes out of sheer impatience. Is chivalry dead? Anyways, a quick search of the term on Instagram, TikTok, and X shows hundreds, if not thousands, of Alpine divorce victims sharing their horror stories. Oh my God. Who are these women dating? Oh my gosh. I think the internet's messing with me, but anyways. Lori, I'm happy you survived the event. I'm sure most men wouldn't leave you stranded in the middle of, literally, in the middle of nowhere. Now, if you're in a large city with a lot of people and he ditches you, I'm assuming you're not in the middle of nowhere. There are other people in the city. You have your phone. You can call a Uber or Lyft driver, right? So, you know, Lori, just chalk it up to life learning. And man, you know, John, no bueno, man. No bueno. This is from medium.com. I'm assuming this is by T. Mugaye. No, M-U-G-A-Y-E. Mugaye? Oh, yeah. March 15. Wait, women are now paying $100 to meet men at singles events. Apparently, women are now paying $100 to meet men while men pay a big fat zero. At least, according to a recent New York Times podcast titled, Is the Swipe Era Over? In the episode, like most hosts, Luke Vanderpjog recounts attending a dating-themed wine mixer held at a gorgeous home in Brooklyn, New York, where the event organizer and later in her mid-30s charged women a participation fee. Now, the question you're probably asking is, why would women pay $100, pay money to meet men? A reasonable question, I might add. Considering the prevailing narrative always is women can go on social media and dating apps and instantly be swamped with attention from desirable men. Well, according to Luke, there are not enough men willing to attend these kinds of events, a point made evidently clear by the skewed gender ratio of 3-1 at the mixer. He really didn't give reasons why this is the case. I will do my best to offer some perspective of what I know as a man. For real? I don't know, man. So, I don't know. I mean, if this really was true, I guess part of me wishes to be in New York and be of the dating age again, you know, because if there are events where pretty women are outnumbering loser men by 3-1 ratio, you know, even a loser like me might have a chance. But I don't know. Hopefully that's not the one in the 3-1 ratio or men like John who left Lori stranded on the John Muir Trail. Or like the guy that's probably, maybe they're all like guys that are getting that body sculpting that we talked about earlier, you know, getting the liposuction of their big fat beer bellies or stuff like that. But who knows? Or maybe all the men are just watching AI versions of Lisa Ann. I have no idea. But oh man, yeah. I'm sorry, ladies. I wish I could take the bullet for you. Speaking of which, this one might be my fault or the fault of men like me. This is from theindependent.com. Dated March 17, and I think this is by Charlotte Cripps, I think is the author. Finally, men are getting the blame for female unplanned childlessness. A new report reveals that men's immaturity is partly due to blame for the crash in the birth rate because many don't feel ready for children. Finally, people can see what women are up against, says Charlotte Cripps. I was 38 years old and my biological clock was a ticking time bomb. I had a low ovarian reserve. Ovarian reserve? Is that really a term? And if I wanted a child, it was emergency stations, now or never. It felt like it was all my fault. I sat in a fertility doctor's office. I burst into tears and dropped a tear-stained fertility report on the floor. Why I hadn't frozen my eggs if I had known my mom had an early menopause. I had been so cavalier about motherhood, acting like I could have had a child whenever I wanted. And why I couldn't have been more practical and found a stable boyfriend rather than placing all my chips on true love. The burden was on me and me alone. There's a catalog for reasons for jaw-dropping global decline in the birth rate, and it's usually considered the woman's fault. I found a textbook problem. The UK birth rate plunged to record low 1.44 per woman in 2024, well under the 2.1 needed to sustain population. And we always were told that this is down to women delaying family life, leaving it too late, or deciding not to have a baby at all. Women have supposedly become too independent, career-oriented to want children. We put off by soaring childcare costs, lengthier career breaks, the housing crisis, dating app fatigue, and being too choosy, apparently. Money is often seen as the number one enemy. The National Office of National Statistics revealed that in 2025, the UK women lose about 65,000 pounds, that's pound sterling, in earnings for the first 5 years after their first child. And with three kids, it can reach 100,000 pounds. Yet we face pronatalist pressure and societal judgment promoting the idea that motherhood is a pinnacle of woman's existence. Governments are panicking. In South Korea, more adult nappies are being sold than baby diapers. And the French government sends letters to 29-year-olds urging them to have children before it's too late. Being child-free is said to push the UK state pension to 75 by 2039. The school closures and mergers have become a norm in some areas. But one thing is often overlooked in explanations of falling birth rates is man's Peter Pan-like immaturity. It's a missing piece of the puzzle. Finally, that is starting to change. Honey, I don't think it is. But the new report by the Center of Social Justice, anything with social justice, that he's just kind of like, eh. Titled The Baby Bus, said that the past 24-year-old man would usually have been married, had a child, and been working for 10 years. Really? But now men are only leaving the nest at the average age of 25. As a result, roughly 600,000 young women may miss out on motherhood, partly because of it, and around 3 million women ages 16 to 45 are now likely never to have children, compared to 2.4 million in their grandparents' generation. So it's the guy's fault. Well, I don't know if it's necessarily the guy's fault, but I think there is an element of truth to it. My suspicion is it's both women and men's fault. And, you know, to be honest with you, the people who are pushing, you know, having a career is more important than having a family on women. But hey, it's, you know, it's important to chase your dreams and all that, but if you really do want to have a family, you should get cracking, at least for women, and even for some men too, because, you know, we've learned that, you know, your sperm kind of gets stale after 48 hours, so to speak. But anyways, speaking of guys, let's see here. Vertically challenged. This is an article. Vertically challenged, four health benefits of being short, by Mackenzie Beard, also the New York Post, dated March 14. Short kings rejoice. Your height may have a hidden advantage. Being tall has its perks, from reaching the top shelf. Studies show that people with extra inches often report higher confidence and self-esteem. But a growing body of research suggests that people of smaller stature may enjoy surprisingly health benefits and can help them live longer. That's welcome news to Americans who've been getting shorter since the 1980s. I don't know if Americans are getting shorter, but maybe because of immigration from third world countries, the average is getting lower. But anyway, one of the tallest nations on earth, the U.S. man now averages 5'9", while women were roughly 5'3.5". Trailing those numbers, don't sweat here. Four reasons your smaller frame could be secretly working in your favor. Lower cancer risk, number one. 2014 Swedish study, over 5 million people, for every 10 centimeters of height, seemed to raise the cancer risk by 18% in women and 11% in women. Tall women appeared to face a 20% higher risk of breast cancer, while the risk of melanoma increased by 30% per 10 centimeters for both men and women. Well, there is more to expose to the sun. You're also closer to the sun. Whatever. An analysis by the World Cancer Research Fund also found taller people may be more likely to develop cancer of the kidneys, ovaries, pancreas, colon, and prostate. Oh, okay. Well, number two, less likely to get a blood clot. In another win for short people, 2017 study of more than 2 million siblings found that taller individuals may face a higher risk of developing dangerous blood clots in their veins, also known as venous thrombolism, VTE. I think that's what Donald Trump might have a version of. Men shorter than 5'3" had a 65% lower risk of blood clots compared to men 6.2 inches or taller. Among women under 5'1" had a 69% lower risk than women 6 feet or taller. Number three, less likely to break a hip. For older adults, a broken hip is sometimes more deadly than cancer, but short people may have an advantage here as well. 2016 meta-analysis of seven studies found potential link between greater height and increased hip fractures. Researchers found several explanations, including that taller people have a higher center of gravity than their shorter peers. This makes them more prone to falls. It means they hit the ground with more energy than falling. Plus, short people don't have as much distance to fall. Number four, more likely to live longer. On average, shorter people live 2 to 5 years longer than their taller peers. Part of the reason may lie in specific genes passed down through families. In a 2014 study of American men of Japanese ancestry found that shorter men were more likely to carry a protective form of the longevity gene FOXO3. We split people into two groups, 5'2" and shorter, 5'4" and taller. It's Dr. Bradley Wilcox with studies investigators found sent a press release. The folks 5.2 inches and shorter live the longest. The taller you got, the shorter you lived. Another study found that smaller, shorter bodies generally experience longer average lifespans and fewer diet-related chronic diseases, especially after middle age. So, short people, you got something to look forward to. Anyways, I think we are on the weird, random stack of stuff here. This is one where, as a lawyer, this kind of tickled my pickle. Trans lawyer's epic meltdown and opposing counsel's face says it all. Townhall.com, Matt Vespa, March 26th. What's happening with attorneys these days in Georgia? Prosecutor filed documents during an appeal that includes statutes and citations that did not exist. Okay, that's neither here nor there. What now it seems to be a child custody case in Oklahoma. There's a major meltdown in a local courthouse where an attorney who identifies as transgender got into serious altercation with the judge, resulting in contempt of court challenge and the arrest that turned increasingly disorderly. I didn't have to go this way. The attorney, Rob Hawkins of Oklahoma City, was trying to file a petition. The judge said the party hadn't filed the proper paperwork and instructed Hopkins to get his documents in order before proceeding. That did not sit well at all. Hopkins accused the judge of bias because he, she, z, it, z, whatever that hell was, transgender, was the judge who managed to stay calm through all this, denied. I think I have a clip of it here. If I can find it here. Okay, here it is.
I pointed you to the exact paragraph.
Stop.
It's her education.
Stop.
Stop because you don't want to hear
what the argument is.
All right. The voice of the woman is the judge. The guy with the raspy voice, that's the lawyer.
You interrupt me one more time. You are being held in direct contempt of court, and
yes,
you can wipe that smirk off.
I don't have
face.
A smirk on my face.
Oh, yes, you
I do.
I do
not.
I am not.
There's a video of this. Yeah, he was.
I'm going to tolerate this from you, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
Fill out the request. Get the form from our court clerk's office on the second floor. Make sure it comports with what you've got already. Get it filed, mailed in, whatever you need to do. Let us assess her request. If it's...
My client's not seen her child. There is no order in this court, and there's been no jurisdiction found that this court has jurisdiction over this child who has never lived in your county.
You just
never lived.
You
I did not. Interrupt. There was a pause. There was a break. I wasn't done with my argument.
And I was not done with my statement. You interrupted again. Do not throw your...
I did not throw. It fell off the bench.
He threw it.
Please stop stating things that are not true, ma'am.
Gaslighting.
Sir, you've got a room full of witnesses.
I do. I put it down. I did. I put it down and it fell down. I did not fall.
Then settle down.
I'm not upset, and I'm not arguing. You're not letting me make an argument. I'm not red in the face, ma'am. I'm not.
Stop.
Yep. As a lawyer, never interrupt a judge. Never interrupt. I mean, if you're in a political debate with somebody talking politics or sports, you know, friends, you know, whatever, random strangers, whatever. But if you're a lawyer in front of a judge in the judge's courtroom, I wouldn't do that. But hey, that's just me.
Our court reporter cannot get what we're both saying.
I am trying to make my argument. You interrupted my argument halfway through on an objection.
This is a panic button that will get every available deputy in.
Yes, ma'am. I'm aware. It's happened to me before.
It's happened to him before. I want... Yeah.
It has.
Yes.
You're out of line.
Yeah,
of course.
I guess so.
Okay. If I push that,
or maybe because I'm a transgender attorney.
Yeah. See, he again kept interrupting the judge.
Practicing all over the state.
I don't know what you are.
You do, ma'am. It's not that you do.
I don't know whether
you do, ma'am. You do.
Other than you have just now
admitted
that.
No, ma'am. You do.
That doesn't have anything
you do.
To do.
It's
with
happened
anything.
When we talked on the phone.
That wasn't talking, let me tell you. You were entirely inappropriate.
You were yelling at me, and I did not even know you were the judge.
And I didn't know you from Adam.
I said, my name is Rob Hopkins. I'm an attorney in Oklahoma City.
No, sir, you did not.
Again, never interrupt a judge. He keeps doing it.
Okay. There's no one there to know that, right?
Okay. So we are pausing this until you get the ADA request form filled out. And it gets processed.
You notice the judge is trying to give this guy so many, just giving him multiple chances after warning him, but you know, he just keeps going.
So we're going to pause a hearing on jurisdiction that's been set twice. I drove an hour and a half to have the hearing. My client's available telephonically, and we are simply not even taking testimony.
Is your client available telephonically?
Yes, ma'am. Today? Yes, ma'am.
Well, then get her on the phone.
Thank you.
Your Honor, which we would object. This is as clear as...
This is the opposing counsel. I can't... If you see the look on his face during this exchange in the video, it is priceless. This is he's like, oh my gosh, I got a story to tell when I get back to the office look.
Knows on my face that this woman will not appear before this court because she has a warrant for stealing...
Objection, you were saying that's court. Not true. And you're ready.
You will find, sir, that you cannot
me. It's over me.
Ah, the decorum.
A shot at me.
I'm not putting
no No, we're stopping.
Get out of my face, sir. Get out of my face, sir.
You may stay.
Get out of my face.
You should leave this county.
Get out of my face. Get out of my face.
These people are my friends, and you're being ugly.
And get out of my face. Why?
This is when the deputies come for him.
Because you're in direct contempt of court.
He shouted at me. No, I'm not being... You did not even say that I was in
contempt. You are in direct
contempt. No, I'm not
doing my stuff. Judge, I apologize, but I felt very threatened by this person. Being screaming and yelling in court. I've never even heard that before in this courtroom.
Wait.
Do not hurt me. Do not hurt me.
They're cuffing him, and I think he's gaslighting.
I'm back.
Do not! Are you throwing me over the...
Stop resisting.
I'm not resisting.
Okay, put your hand behind your back. Stop resisting.
You know exactly what's happening.
Why don't you all walk that way
sometimes? I can't walk. I'm being thrown down.
Just stop. Settle down.
He's not.
Settle down. Do not grab me. Do not grab me. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?
It just goes on from there. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, for those of you who probably have an idea how lawyers behave in court, I don't know what to tell you. I really don't know what to tell you. Let's see here. What else is on the weird stack of stuff? Oh yeah, this is for all the ladies out there, or men in general. We took weight. We lost weight on GLP drugs, and then we lost our sex drive by Mackenzie Beard, February 26, California Post. So, yeah. So, this woman started taking the fat shot or whatever, and I lost a lot of weight. Her and her partner lost their sex drive. So, so, for all you ladies who might be worried about not having kids or being abandoned by men, maybe a few shots of fat pills? I don't know. Just the case, maybe. Oh, who knows? It's just, I'm sorry, that lawyer in Oklahoma. I mean, in California, I think right now they added a civility statement or whatever, part of your ethics training. Every 3 years, I think you have to take a class in how to be civil or not be a complete jerk. I think they just added that recently. I guess they don't have that in Oklahoma. I don't know what to tell you, man. It's just one of those strange, strange things. But, and I do feel sorry for all you ladies that wanted to have children but can't because all us guys didn't grow up as fast as you did. In our defense, you ladies, when you were in your prime childbearing years, you know, didn't want to get married and have kids. So let's just say there's equal responsibility to go around both ends. And if you want to hedge your bets, freeze your eggs, and, well, us guys, you know, I guess we could always freeze our, you could donate to a sperm bank, but I guess if those little critters get a little stale after 48 hours, what can you do? But, so ladies, you know, keep your options open, and, apologies for us men for, leaving you stuck on the John Muir trail or not maturing enough or not having a big enough penis or whatever it is that is our fault. But anyways, we're getting toward the end of the show, so... Thank you for joining me here on the Unclenched Podcast. I've been your host, Notorious BLT. See you next time.
I've known you since Brad and Angelina. We go back like Pontiac seats. If I got an eye with a mess, I gotta clean up. I know you. pressure on.